2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball. It's Wednesday, June 29th, 2016. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chet Chesko. Chet, it's been a huge week of Philadelphia sports on all fronts, with Eric Lindros and Pat Quinn being selected to the Hockey Hall of Fame. The Flyers traded back in the first round and still got their guy, German Rupsoff. We're going to have to learn to speak Russian, I guess, here in Philly. And in the draft, while the 76ers selected Ben Simmons with the first pick in the NBA draft, then held pat and didn't trade, the passing of former Eagles coach Buddy Ryan, and the Phils starting to play some better baseball in Arizona. They've won 2 out of 3. They're tied 8-8 here late in today's game, hoping to sweep the Diamondbacks. And on top of that, in college athletics, lost an icon in the passing of Tennessee Lady Vols basketball coach Pat Summitt at the young age of 64.
Yeah, one of the busiest June weeks you can imagine, Bill. Some good news, some sad news for sure, and we're going to do our best to get to all of it over the course of our hour together.
Well, before we get started, we want to let our listeners know that we will have our Carl's Cards and Collectibles trivia question again tonight. We will be giving away a signed 8x10 color photo of the Eagles' great running back, Wilbert Montgomery, that was signed last Saturday at Carl's Cards to the first person that can call and correctly answer our trivia question. We'll be asking that question right about 7:27. So write this number down so you're ready. 929-477-2855. That's 929-477-2855. And I'll give the listeners a hint. The question will be about our special guest, Glenn Wilson. So pay close attention to our conversation. So with that business taken care of, let's welcome back one of our favorite guests, former Phillies All-Star outfielder Glenn Wilson, to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable. Glenn, welcome back.
Guys, thanks for having me. It's great to be back.
Chet, let's take her away.
All right. Let's do it. Glenn, this is Chet. Hey, Glenn, we're going to talk lots of baseball, but, you know, you're known for your baseball career, of course. But did I read that you went to Sam Houston State actually to play football? How good a football player were you?
Football was my first love. I actually signed a football scholarship before my senior baseball season even started. And I was going there to play wide receiver and do their punting, and ended up doing that for one full year and 2 games into my second year. And that was my first love. Baseball was just something that I was good at, but it wasn't something I wanted to pursue. I wanted to pursue the NFL, but when they made me strictly a punter at Sam Houston State going into my second year, I said, I can't do this. And walked away bitter, but, you know, It gave me my first opportunity to just lift weights for baseball and work year-round on baseball. So it actually worked out good for me, you know, all the way around.
Yeah, I'd say so. Hey, speaking of those days, you were with the Phillies, of course, in the mid-'80s when the Eagles hired Buddy Ryan, whom we just lost Tuesday morning. What do you remember about Buddy Ryan and that era of Eagles football while you were in town?
You know, the number one thing that sticks out for me is when he punched Fisher in the head at the Astrodome in a game when he was coaching with the Oilers, and we loved him here in Houston. And, you know, it just – he was – you know, had he have been a coach of mine on any sport, I'm sure I would have loved him. The city of Houston loved him. It's just a sad, sad day. And when I read it this morning, I said a prayer for his family, because that man was so instrumental in so many people's lives and especially the game of football.
Hey, Glenn, in your book that you you wrote, and you could tell us a little bit more about that as we go, but you you spoke some words about Mr. Sparky Anderson, who was your manager with the Detroit Tigers. You and Sparky didn't get along so well back in the day.
No, we didn't, and it was kind of a surprise to me because, you know, I was their number one pick, and, you know, first-round draft pick, you know, 18th in the country taken. I get to the big leagues in a year and a half, and from day one, you could just tell there was something about this man that he didn't like me. And I didn't know if it was because I was young and inexperienced with, you know, handling the media or handling fans, you know, that sort of thing, or what it was. But you could just tell there was tension somewhere along. And he would make little smart-aleck comments when he'd come in the mornings in spring training, even after I'd already, you know, been in my first big league spring training. It would be, "Hello, Mr. Wilson," you know, like a little smart-ass type way. And I'm like, you know, I don't know how much of this I'm going to be able to take because this guy doesn't know my personality other than what he had seen in the 81 strike when the Tigers had a break because of the strike. He got to come down to Double-A and see me play when I was in Double-A. So I don't know what it was. So, you know, I don't know if it was something I did or maybe I hit on his daughter. I don't know. You know? I mean, you just never know, you know, in that situation. But when he told Howard Johnson and I that when we got to the big leagues, our very first day in the big leagues, to not associate with anybody on or off the field on our team that had four or more years of experience, I was in shock. I was, you know, and Hojo was too. Howard Johnson. Wow. We walked out of the clubhouse, out of Sparky's office, looked at the clubhouse and went, "Looks like you and I are going to be friends, buddy, because there ain't too many guys in here that don't have more than 4 years." So, and I didn't like that rule. I thought that was a bad rule, but you know, now that I'm older, I understand it because, you know, Sparky had huge success already with the Reds. And he had promised Detroit in 5 years he'd win a World Series. So he was under pressure himself, which I didn't know anything about as a young kid.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to follow that up and ask you about that. It was obviously, he was very successful with the Big Red Machine before you got with him in Detroit. Was a lot of his thought process just it was built around veterans and the kids were just kind of in the way?
You know, I really don't know because if you look back at Cincinnati's success, the Big Red Machine, it was really Dave Bristol's team. Sparky inherited that team. He didn't have to build anything. Dave had every one of those guys but about five from Double-A, Triple-A to the big leagues. And then Bristol's fired, Sparky's in when all of those guys come up. Rose, Perez, Concepcion, just go down the list. Geronimo, Will McEnany, you can go down the list. And Sparky inherited that group. And to this day, I'll say that Sparky Anderson was not a great field manager. He was 50-50 at best.
Interesting. Speaking of managers, Glenn, as a Philly, you played for Paul Owens in 84 and for Lee Elia the latter half of 87. The two and a half seasons in between, the Phil skipper was John Felsky. Now, he's not generally on anyone's list of all-time great managers. What do you remember about the John Felsky era?
You know, it was a very strange situation. The first year, the Pope stayed in the dugout with him. And, you know, having the Pope was awesome. You know, because when you have an elderly man like that, you automatically respect him and you want to play hard for him. And when Felsky came in, it was, okay, let's see what he's going to do. Well, obviously, he had been in their AAA system, and the Phillies were starting to bring up their AAA ball players. And we were seeing John Russell and Steve Jeltz and Jeff Stone. You saw those guys coming up at the same time with him, and he was trying to mix them in, I felt, too soon. But, you know, be it as it may, you know, we gave John the benefit of the doubt, but then we started seeing moves made that anybody that has 5 or 6 years in the major leagues, if you haven't seen those types of moves, then you're questioning, why aren't we bunting in this situation? And when that starts to happen, oh, look out, snowball effect, downhill, here we go. You're looking at 15 games out by September at best.
Yeah.
So, and that's what happened to John.
Mm-hmm.
And he never landed anywhere else either after that.
No, he headed home to those Jiffy Lubes in Chicago and went back to work.
Right. Well, hey, Glenn, in parts of you played part of 10 seasons or most 9 full and part of a 10th season. You hit 98 career home runs, but you hit 49 of those in your 4 years in Philly. How was it hitting at Veterans Stadium? Was it the launching pad that people wanted us to believe it was?
You know, honestly, I felt it was easier to hit home runs in Detroit than it was in Philadelphia just because of the taller wall. For some reason, I know it was only 371 to the gap, but because of the tall wall, it felt like it was bigger. And that's just the perception that I think a lot of outfielders get because you're standing near that wall. And you see how tall it is, and of course, when you first come over, you see how tall that wall is. Then you go to Cincinnati, they got a short wall, and it looks like a smaller ballpark. Same thing at the Astrodome. The Astrodome obviously was a monster place, but the wall wasn't that tall. So it wasn't the bet was not a launching pad, but it certainly was a great place to hit and a fabtabulous place to play right field.
Glenn, the Phils just drafted high school outfielder Mickey Moniak, the number one overall pick. Now, what sort of advice would the older, wiser Glenn Wilson give to this 18-year-old kid?
You know, it's funny. When I knew I was going to be on the show this morning, I looked at video clips of him, read some articles about him, saw where the new president and the general manager for the Phillies and what their belief system is about buying, hitting, and growing pitching, I believe is their main theory. Or is it vice versa, growing pitching and buying hitting? No, it's growing hitting and buying pitching, where I believe just the opposite. But advice for this young man. Number one, he just got $6 million left, 3 on the table, tells me he wants to play Major League Baseball. So that's a good thing. That's the first great sign there is. However, watching his swing, oh, my gosh, I want to corner him right now and let him know the good things he has and the bad things he has. Because I spotted 3 things in his swing that was just really awesome, and I spotted 2 that were really bad. Number one, bad, okay? The worst thing he's got going for his swing right now is he doesn't keep his head to the ball when it's making contact with the bat. He has a tendency, not all the time, but to let his head drift with his swing. And to me, you know, that has to be fixed right away. Number two, I don't know if this kid can bunt. And number three, he's not near as fast as they're making him out to be. They said he's above average speed. I've watched the video. No, he's not above average speed out of the batter's box. Now, probably playing center field, he's going to do fine. But watching him take balls in the outfield, I saw the negatives there also. He's taking an extra step instead of just crow hopping and throwing on just regular ground balls. Well, when you do that on regular ground balls, guess what? In a game, you're going to do the same thing. So whoever, you know, is going to take this kid there in the Gulf Coast League, GCL, they better, you know, look at all of those tapes and get that fixed. Now, the greatest thing he's got going for him that Philly fans need to be excited about, that he's got a lot more power than he really shows because of his hips. His hips are so quick when that front foot hits the ground and he's swinging, that back hip is driving so fast that I was amazed. It reminded me of a young Barry Bonds. Just then, I'm talking the hips, only the hips. However, the back knee is not going lower than it needs to go also. So there's a good and a bad in the swing. There's some goods and there's some bads in his defense. But off the field, stay away from social media and stay away from the bars. Poor kid, I don't know how an organization does it with just turning them loose. I hope that they have curfews during instructional league. Besides, I know they have curfews during a regular minor league season at any level. But I think he's going to be fantastic. I think he has a chance to be a fantastic player, but I certainly wouldn't keep him down in A or rookie ball or instructional ball for 2 to 3 years. I would get him to double A as fast as I can because I don't want him seeing all those wild pitchers while they're younger. And that's what helped me have success early in my career was they sent me straight to double A after 3 years of college. And I got to jump right in the kitchen. And all I kept hearing in double A was, wait till you get to the big leagues, all the pitching's around the plate. Well, for a kid out of high school, man, get him along fast. I mean, hurry. Teach him all of these other things that he has to learn about dealing with the media and dealing with fans. Get those out of the way early. He sounds like a great kid. He acts and says all the right things. But make sure that he doesn't end up making one or two mistakes that the media blows up on him and it affects his play on the field because that can happen. And obviously that's what happened to Johnny Manziel.
Oh, yeah. But that's some good analysis by you, Glenn. We really appreciate that. You did your homework for the show. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Let's get to this movie. Because I discovered this the other day, the fact that there was a connection between you and this movie, Everybody Wants Some. The movie came out in April from director Richard Linklater, who also did Dazed and Confused, another one of these period pieces. That was about the 70s. This one's about the 80s. And apparently, yes, the alpha male on the college baseball team in this movie, Everybody Wants Some, is named Glenn McReynolds and is a super competitive guy who can't stand to lose. He's actually based on you. So how did this come about? What's the deal? He's even got a Glenn Wilson type 1980s mustache. So what's happening
here? Richard Linklater was a freshman when I was a junior. He comes in just like all freshmen, like I had to and everybody before me. And we were already a nationally ranked NAIA team. And, here he is. A no-name, and we're loaded. We've got studs at every position. And he's going to try to crack the lineup. So I was the, alpha. I mean, like I say it to everybody, is this guy, this Tyler Hoechlin, that plays me in the movie, does a better job than I do playing me back in the day. I mean, I literally was in shock after seeing the movie. I turned to my youngest son and I said, "That's your old man. That's exactly how I was. I hated losing. It ate at me. I would fight. I would curse. I would do anything to beat you at anything." And to me, that was embedded in me by my oldest brother, who was 8 years older, that I talk about in my book, Headed Home. So that was a great part of me for athletics. Now, for, dealing with the public, you had to learn. I had to learn, how to separate the two. You almost have to be two different people. But here's the beauty of it. When I came to Philadelphia after those two just really tough years in Detroit with management. You know, Sparky, he had Alex Gramas, Billy Consolo, all his buds from Cincinnati. Al Kaline, you know, was one of his Bobos. George Kell, they were all on Sparky's side of everything. Sparky even called me into his office, and I talk about it in the book, and asked me to stop diving for baseballs. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm not doing it on purpose. I'm doing it because that's, you know, I have to, you know. So, you know, that it's just one of those areas of learning stages. But the beauty of was coming to Philadelphia at the time that I came to Philadelphia. The first year was tough because I don't know anybody. I don't know anything about the league or the pitchers. So, naturally, that's tough. Plus, they threw me in left field, and I spent most of my time in center the first year, right the second year. There's a huge difference in left compared to the other two. And I was actually confused. And I knew at the end of that year, once I had that meeting with Paul Owens, which actually was started out as a argument wrestling match in the little bit of a punch thrown by the Pope. And I knew after that took place, he told me that he respected me more now than he ever did, that I would get my shot that spring in right field, and I had to beat out John Russell, and I'd be the everyday right fielder. And I said, I will not let you down because I will show you things you haven't seen. And, man, when I got on that AstroTurf in right field and the way I worked on my defense and how strong my arm kept getting, it was so much fun that I could tell the fans were having fun with it. I could hear, that was the only time I ever heard the crowd, was when a base hit hit the right, Vince Coleman, didn't matter, whoever, Otis Nixon at second base, and I could actually hear the roar of the crowd as I'm racing for the ball to scoop and throw to the plate. I could hear the buildup. And, man, I loved throwing, obviously. You know, I had 12 errors. I think six of them were because throws hit runners. But, you know, coming to Philadelphia was the perfect situation for Glenn Wilson because I was that type of athlete that if you pissed me off, I played better. And Dave Bristol was the man that was his job, was to piss me off every week, at least twice a week, so that I would perform better. That was in 1985. And look what happens. Running
hey,
two
Glenn,
RBIs, you know, all-star
yeah.
team.
All-star.
Now, you know, now going into 86, you've got somebody legit hitting behind Schmidt, and he wins his third MVP. So, you know, to me, Philadelphia is my home, my baseball home. You know, that is, I mean, you know, when I go out in public, you know, I still wear baseball caps. I wear a Phillies hat. I wear a Phillies jersey. I mean, T-shirts. I still wear Phillies stuff. My office is decorated with all my Phillies stuff. And I've got a portion of Detroit, Sam Houston, and Houston. But, man, Philadelphia is what made Glenn Wilson a better baseball player. And had I stayed there longer, there ain't a doubt in my mind, I would have gotten at least 15 years in.
Yeah, you had a memorable 4 years, and you were certainly a fan favorite. Hey, we got away from the movie, but there's one thing I got to ask you about the movie. You talked to us before we went on the air. There's a scene in the movie where the guy who was essentially playing you is swinging an axe at a baseball, and he's basically hitting the baseball in half with the axe. I said, that can't be real. You said you actually used to do that. Tell me what happened.
I was doing that when I was a freshman in high school. It was one of those afternoons where you're just, you know, sitting around drinking beers and hanging out with the guys. And, you know, one of my cocky pitchers, and I was the cocky hitter, and, you know, it just – happened to work out that, you know, even though we were half blitzed, that I got a piece of it and split the ball. And it's really not that hard if you've done it before. So, It looks like a big deal in the movie, but it's really not. So, and the ping pong paddle. The ping pong paddle scene took place too. I got beat by the little freshman, and I wanted to kill him.
Yeah.
I didn't just throw the paddle at him. I challenged him to a fight.
I saw his quote on that. He said that really did happen. He threw the paddle at him. So yeah, you had quite a temper back in the day.
Oh yeah, you dead gum right. I had to work really hard at keeping it under control. You know, when I was a Major League Baseball player, I mean, I felt like umpires were wrong a lot, and I think I only was ejected 3 times, but probably came close about 30.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I was very intense.
Yes, you were.
Hey, Glenn, you mentioned earlier about your book, Headed Home. Tell us a little bit about that and where the listeners can get a hold of that book. And I know it's still available out there on Amazon. Can you share some information on that?
Yeah, you can get it at Amazon.com. And then if you'll Facebook me, if it's New Jersey, Philly, Delaware, Lehigh Valley area, even New York, you know, I'll confirm you as a friend until you make a smart aleck comment, and then I'll delete you. But you can confirm me as a friend, and if you want me to get you a book, I can do the same thing. It just costs a little more if we go that route. Now, if you purchase it, then you PM, private message me, and you can send it to me here in Houston. I've got a place set up where they come to, and then they're brought to me, and I sign them, personalize them, and send them back. And in the book, I tell you from A to Z how it started. Actually, the book starts, I'm in the on-deck circle at the 1985 All-Star Game, and then I take you backwards right before the at-bat. It's a Christian book also. I talk about how I finally went in search of God towards the end of the book, and what I ended up finding out, what I believe I have found. But I talk about, I don't hold anything back. I talk about the women on the road, the hotel bars, the trying of the steroid. I lay it all out there. I don't hold anything back. I don't rat anybody out. So if any of my former teammates are listening, they can get a copy. I don't even mention their names. I do mention about one party where there were some Hall of Famers that if you're a pretty good trivia guy, you can figure out who it was. but you got to think deep. But yeah, you get it at Amazon, send it to me, I'll sign it, we'll get it back to you. Or if you want to book me for a book signing, you know, just get a hold of you guys and y'all can get in touch with me.
Sounds good. And I can tell you, when we had you on the show the last time, I actually got one of those books from you signed, and it is a really good read, and I would certainly recommend it. Like you said, you have laid it all out there pretty good. It's real life stuff.
And it's hard to believe I'm still married after 36 years. I mean, I must have married an angel.
I was thinking that as I was reading it as well.
I finally asked her one time. I said, why are you still with me? She goes, you think I'm an idiot? I thought that, you know, if every wife was like that, oh, my gosh, if they only understood what really happens. We don't go looking for it. It flashed at us. I mean, I talk about the one incident where I went into my hotel room. There's a naked girl in there. What am I going to do? You know, I mean, my gosh, I got a day off the next day.
Oh, jeez.
Well, hey, Glenn, we are about running out of time. And as we mentioned to you earlier, we do what we call the Fast Five, or basically Chet asks you five quick questions, and you give him five quick answers. You up for that?
I'm ready.
All right. Now, these are like 20-second answers, Glenn. We've got to keep this real brief. So here we go.
Right.
Fast Five with Glenn Wilson. Glenn, as a pirate in 88 and part of 89, you were a teammate of Barry Bonds, who a year or two later started putting up all those monster numbers. Did you know right away he was going to be a superstar?
Right away. Absolutely. Baddest man I ever saw go to home plate.
He did okay. The first two home runs off then Montreal Expos rookie Randy Johnson came off the bat of none other than Glenn Wilson. Do you remember that September 1988 game and those two bombs off Randy Johnson?
Yes, but more so I remember the piece of gum that I stuck above the bathroom door so that every time I came to Montreal I'd touch it with my right index finger. So he threw me a fastball the first time he hit it out. Next time he tried this little rinky-dink slider because he was a rookie, and I took that out too, and it was like, oh, this kid's going to be caked. So next year I faced him, took him deep again, and then he finally came over and asked me, he goes, what am I doing wrong? I said, well, if you'd ever learn to drop down, you'll be something. Obviously. I think he took a little bit of advice.
Yeah, he had a pretty good career. So hitting against Randy Johnson, at least early in his career, was no big deal for you. What pitcher was the toughest to go up against in the 1980s for Glenn Wilson?
Tom Glavine or Steve Trout. Anybody that was left-handed, turned it over, kept it away. I wanted anybody that was right-handed, left-handed, didn't matter, threw over the top, threw 100 miles, 90 to 100 miles an hour with a curveball. That's who I wanted, but if you were left-handed and turned it over and kept it away, never gave me anything to hit, you'd get me out, and you'd probably get a 6-4-3 if you had a runner at first.
Number four, you were renowned for that terrific throwing arm. How many guys did you throw out at first base over the years, guys who thought they had a single to right?
Three.
All right. And finally, you played with some great players.
I apologize. Could have had four, but I didn't throw Nolan Ryan out because I had to place him.
I see. And finally, Glenn, you played with some terrific players over your major league career, Schmidt, Trammell, BGO, Barry Bonds. Which teammate was the best pure hitter?
Wow. Oh, I mean, Bonds. I mean, that's easy. Bonds was the best. I mean, from the first day I saw him, stand at home plate, and where he stood, I went, I may be looking at the baddest individual to ever step in the batter's box. And that when he was, that would have been 89.
Yeah.
So, no doubt, Bonds.
All right. Glenn Wilson, thank you for playing Fast Five.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Glenn. Well, hey, we ran you over. We're sorry about that, but we certainly appreciate you taking the time to join us. Always, always great stories, always great stuff. So much more we can still talk about.
Yeah, I appreciate y'all's time. Hey, I heard that it's only 4 years now to make the Hall of Honor there at the new stadium.
For
a Phillies player. So, Philly fans, get out there and vote next year. Let's go, let's go, let's go.
All right,
got to have Glenbo. Glenbo has to be on the wall or in the bathroom wall. Let's go.
We will campaign
for
you, Glenn. We'll have you on next year for sure. All right,
take care. Y'all take care. Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
All right, Glenn, thanks. Okay, Chad, it's trivia time. And like we said, if you were listening, you're going to know the answer to this. Our shopforkisses.org phone line to answer the trivia question is 929-477-2855. As we said, we'll be giving away a signed 8x10 color photo of Eagles great running back Wilbert Montgomery, signed just last Saturday at Carl's Cards, to the first person that can call and correctly answer this question. Here we go. Glenn Wilson hit 98 career home runs in his 10-year major league career. Four of those seasons were with the Phillies. How many of them were as a Philly? We asked the question, Chet. We gave the answer.
How many home runs as a how many home runs as a Philly?
How many home runs were of his 98 were with the Phillies in his 4-year career? All right.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a break. Thank our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to www.shopforkisses.org's website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484 319-8043. Okay, Chet, hey, we got a lot to cover tonight, so let's start it with the Flyers and the Big E. Eric Lindros and Pat Quinn have been selected to the Hockey Hall of Fame, but Mark Recchi and Rod Brind'Amour have to wait. What'd you think?
Really surprised Recchi didn't get in. Most of the experts thought that this would be his year, but it didn't happen. As for the Big E, hey, it's about time. No, he didn't turn out to be the next great one after Gretzky and Lemieux, but he was still pretty darn good, averaging more than a point a game, winning a Hart Trophy as MVP. And he was a dominant force for several years before the concussions, of course, started to take their toll. I know he was a bit of a high-maintenance guy, and there was all the stuff with his parents and Bob Clark, but he was a guy that people in other cities would go to see when the Flyers were in town, and a guy that opposing coaches had to game plan for. And he was just great to watch on most nights as a Flyer. So really happy to see Lindros finally get in. It took a little longer than expected, but he's certainly deserving.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, I got into a debate with some folks the other day, and you know, they're saying, well, he didn't play long enough and this and that. You know what? Sandy Koufax didn't play long enough either, and neither did Gale Sayers. But they were at the top of the game why they were there. And there's still quite a piece of work that goes into Lindros making the Hall of Fame, and I'd say absolutely shouldn't have taken 6 years to get in.
Yeah, I agree. He's deserving. As for Pat Quinn, by the way, he had a long career as a coach and GM in the league, and we remember him for his 3 years as Flyers coach, which included that memorable 35-game unbeaten streak in 1980. So congratulations to the late Pat Quinn also.
Yeah, and, you know, I didn't realize this, Chet, but Pat Quinn spent 20 years as a head coach in the National Hockey League and is seventh on the all-time wins list and two-time, as you mentioned, Coach of the Year in that 79-80 season, and again a decade later in 91-92. So he's at 20 seasons, two Coach of the Year awards, and 684 wins, seventh on the all-time list. Quite a career for Pat Quinn. Now let's talk about Mark Recchi. And, you know, I'm okay with Lindros, certainly, and with Vachon and Quinn and Makarov, but by gosh, Mark Recchi needs to be in the Hall of Fame, my friend.
Yeah, I think so, too. And it would have been nice for him to go in this year, you know, with Lindros, because as a Flyers fan, those were two guys that we rooted for so many years. I know Recchi played a lot of other cities as well, but for me, he's always going to be remembered as a Flyer. The heck with those Penguins years, too. But hopefully next year he'll get in because he's certainly, as you said, deserving of Hall of Fame honors.
Yeah, and one, you know, Rod Brind'Amour is also on that list. And, you know, I really like Rod Brind'Amour as a player, but I'm thinking I might have to reach whether Rod Brind'Amour is a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, he's borderline. I loved Rod Brind'Amour. We talked about him when the Flyers honored him last year. He was one of my favorites. Just what a tough guy. He was hard-nosed, always gave 110%. I don't know if he has the numbers that are Hall of Fame worthy, but he's borderline. So I would have to look a little deeper to see for sure. But I liked Rod, I can tell you that.
Yeah, me too. Okay, hey, let's slide over, talk Eagles. As we mentioned, former Eagles coach Buddy Ryan passed away yesterday at some age in the 80s, Chet, maybe 82, 84, 85, who exactly knows? But
Les Bowen knows, 85.
Well, I was very surprised, at the outpouring from Eagles fans in regards to Buddy, considering he never won a playoff game here with the Eagles. Now, I think to give him his credit, he certainly made the Eagles relevant and the gangrene defense and all that he created. But all said and done, he was a 500 coach here in Philadelphia.
Yeah, no playoff wins in three tries with the Birds, but he's a guy who, as you alluded to, made people excited again about Eagles football in the mid-80s after a few down years under Marion Campbell. What a personality. Who could forget him saying, "You got a winner in town," upon his arrival? His lack of interest in coaching the replacement players during the 87 strike or lockout, the body bag game, the Bounty Bowl, and just how he stoked the rivalry with the Cowboys in general. So, yeah, no playoff wins, but he was a defensive innovator with the 46 defense. And what a character, and he helped build that Eagles defense that was so great in his last couple of years, and then in 91, the year after he left, when they were number one overall. So, you got to give him a lot of credit for that. And, boy, in retrospect, would you rather have had Rich Kotite in 91, 92 or Buddy Ryan? For me, I'd love to see what Buddy could have done with another couple of years.
Well, I certainly could, too. But, you know, the bravado that brought him into town was saying that the winner is here was the same bravado that got him run out of town, too, because he just wasn't real good at keeping that trap shut.
Well, yeah, he would call the team owner, Norman Brayman, the guy in France. You know, he would call some players only by their numbers or nicknames, and sometimes they were derogatory nicknames. He sometimes would air some dirty laundry in public, you know, about players who weren't performing. So that sometimes didn't sit well with people, and some of those players too, of course. But most of the players did love him. I mean, from Alan Page when he was with the Vikings as a coach to Mike Singletary with the champion Bears to Seth, Reggie, and Jerome with the Eagles, all loved the guy. Eric Allen talking about him yesterday. They would all run through a wall for Buddy Ryan. So, yeah, there's got to be something there. And from what I understand, you know, he had that kind of rough exterior and, you know, would say some mean things sometimes. But he was supposedly a teddy bear when you got to know him and just a great guy. And, you know, when you saw the 30 for 30 that ESPN ran a year or so ago about the 85 Bears, you see how many of the ex-Bears are still in touch with him now. Seth Joyner just visited Buddy Ryan last week before he passed. So, I mean, his players loved him, so there's something to be said for that.
Yeah, and, you know, I guess the problem I have or question I have is that, you know, many people saying, well, this is the greatest Eagles coach of our lifetimes, and I certainly can't go there.
No, I'm not going there either. I mean, you got to give Andy Reid his props for being the greatest coach of our lifetime, or Dick Vermeil would be maybe a close second. Buddy's probably, you know, third or fourth on the list. But as you said, as we both indicated, he certainly made Eagles football relevant and exciting again in the mid-80s. You remember, they didn't always sell out back in the early 80s, even the latter part of the Dick Vermeil era and under Marion Campbell. They, a couple of times, weren't on TV because of the blackout rule, because they did not sell out the games. Well, you know, since Buddy's been in town 30 years now later, it's tough to get a ticket for an Eagles game. So they've been more than relevant ever since 1986.
Yep, and he was very successful against those Dallas Cowboys who, whether it was Tom Landry he was rubbing his nose in or if it was Jimmy Johnson, it was fun, no matter whose nose was getting rubbed in it. But
yeah,
he made it that fun, and then you know, he kind of laughed about it. I guess we all liked that.
Yeah, I mean, there was the Bounty Bowl. It was also the fake kneel down and then throw for what turned into another touchdown late in the game against Dallas. So, yeah, the fans certainly loved Buddy for that, for Buddy's disdain of the Cowboys.
Yes, sir. Wait, we have to move on. Let's talk 76ers. They got their franchise player in Ben Simmons with the first pick in the NBA draft. It also appears they'll be adding Dario Saric and maybe a healthy Joel Embiid to the mix. So it's like having three number one draft picks here, but were you surprised that they held on to that 24 and 26 rather than pull a trigger maybe on a bad trade? They didn't feel like they were getting the value to put a trade package together, and they held tight.
Yeah, I was a bit surprised, but, you know, in retrospect, I'm glad they didn't make a deal just to make a deal. They can still do a trade this summer, and I think they will. I really doubt that Embiid, Noel, and Okafor will all be on the roster come November 1st. So, yeah, I think something's still going to happen. I love the fact that Saric apparently is coming over. He said, you know, he's a man of his word. He said he's coming over, so hopefully he'll be a contributor right away. As for Ben Simmons, I wasn't sold on him initially, but I got to say I've been impressed with how he's handled himself with the media, and he seems to have a good attitude and a big upside. I'm really excited to see Simmons as a Sixer. And by the way, the guy they drafted at number 24, Timotei Luwawu, was considered by a lot of the experts as a steal at that spot. Some folks had him going in the top 10 or certainly in the mid-teens. So Sixers may have gotten a steal with the number 24 pick in Luwawu from France. He's a 6'7", athletic guy, a pretty good three-point shooter. His defense is a question mark, but a lot of the Sixers are question marks when it comes to defense. And this guy does plan to be a Sixer this coming season. So, boy, there's a lot to watch for with the Sixers come October.
Yeah, and you know, I think hopefully Simmons is the deal, but I can tell you it's kind of been exciting. It's been exciting that they got the number one guy. They got the guy that everybody seemed to think what was the number one guy. And I think there's a little excitement around the organization now that certainly hasn't been there in a long time. And getting Saric in the fold, if that does happen, and having Embiid, there's a lot of pawns in play here, and I think it's been kind of exciting here in the last week.
It certainly has. And by the way, we do not have a caller yet, so if you know how many homers Glenn Wilson hit as a Philly during his four seasons with the Phillies, how many homers did Glenn Wilson hit as a Philly? Give us a call. You get that Wilbur Montgomery autographed picture. The phone number, 929-477-2855. Again, 929-477-2855.
Hey, Jet, real quick, I wanted to throw this out here, too. And I was reading an article, and we're not going to go through all these guys because we don't have the time, with the Flyers draft. But, you know, one of the scouts said the Flyers hands down had the best NHL draft class. And another ranking came out that had them as the number three class, with only Toronto and Calgary being ahead of them. And they had the number one and the number six picks, where the Flyers didn't have anything near that low. So a lot of good things coming out of the draft for the Flyers as well as the Sixers. So a lot of high hopes around Philadelphia these days.
Oh, that's for sure. Yeah, I don't know a whole lot about this German Rubsov, but hopefully he's the real deal, and we'll see him in a couple of years. And you got, you know, Provorov hopefully showing up this year. So, yeah, as we said last week, a lot to be excited about on the Philadelphia sports scene right now, including our Phillies, who just finished off a sweep of the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, and you know, the Phils were battling, and you know, where I'm located, I get the Major League Baseball package, so a lot of times I may get the opposition's game feed and not the Philly broadcasters. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you, over the weekend, even though they weren't winning in San Francisco, they were getting nothing but praise from that Mike Krukow is one of the broadcasters for the Giants, and for their effort, their hustle, and he was calling them the Fightins. Every day he was calling them the Fightins. And so maybe that focus situation that we had a little run-in with, maybe we got that straightened out. And, you know, Chet, right now we're one game short of midseason. We're at 80 games, 35-45. Can they match that in the second half? I mean, if they did, they'd finish right about 70-90, somewhere right in that area. And would you be okay with that?
Yeah, and that's pretty much what we have both been expecting. My preseason guesstimate was 72-90. Yours was 70-92. So, yeah, they're just about right on that kind of pace. And there is plenty to watch for as we go into the second half. How Franco responds after a subpar first half. How the young pitchers do. Whether Odubel Herrera can stay around 300. Whether Tommy Joseph is a legitimate guy to play first base for the next several years. What prospects at Lehigh Valley or Reading get a big league call-up, etc. A little concerned about Nick Williams getting benched again for not hustling. I'm concerned about Aaron Nola having, what, four straight rough outings right now. He's got to turn that around. We got word that Mark Appel, the pitcher they acquired in the offseason, just had season-ending surgery. So don't expect to see him anytime soon in a Phillies uniform. But, yeah, lots to look forward to, and I certainly think they're going to be right around that 70-72 win total this year. It's what we expected, but we want to see good signs along the way from some of these players and see what guys are called up and what they have to offer. And I think they're only going to get better over the next 5 years.
Oh, I do too. And you know, one of the things I didn't have a chance to look up, but I am going to look up and have this prepared for next week, because I think there's a direct correlation between Vince Velasquez and winning and losing. I don't know what their record was when he went on the shelf, or, you know, the time he was on the shelf to the time he came and slammed the door the other night with five shutout innings. But I think it's pretty drastic. And maybe Vince Velasquez, even at such a young age, is that stopper they need, that guy that just comes in and gets it done. And I think, I believe he's 6-2 now, and yeah, he has pitched pretty well. And I just want to see if there's a direct relationship to them losing when they lost him for a short period of time.
It was great to see him come back. I was really concerned that he was going to have a serious injury when he went out, so it was good to see him only gone for 2 weeks and then come back with five shutout innings. That was nice to see. I really like Jared Eichhoff. We've talked about him before. He just goes out and throws quality start after quality start. Even Tuesday night when he didn't have his best stuff, he still hung in there. He had a lot of guys on base but managed to get out of jams and gave them, what, five or six decent innings. You know, there's a lot to look forward to with this pitching staff. And how about the reliever they just called up, that, Odubre Ramos? He looked great his first three or four outings. I think today he got touched up a little bit. But he throws strikes. He throws heat. He's a strikeout pitcher. So they're talking about him as a possible saver, closer down the road. So he's going to be a guy to watch, too, going forward.
Interesting. Well, hey, Chet, we don't want to get away without talking about, this is going to be really cool, a very special guest we have coming next week. And, you know, we said we were going to cover it all here at Philly Press Box Radio, and we're going to throw it back to our youth next week. Tell us all about it.
Our show next week won't be for everyone, but I know that some listeners are going to absolutely love it. As a kid in the late 60s and early 70s, Bill, I spent every Sunday night, I swear to God, watching, yes, roller derby or roller games on Channel 48 in Philly with Elmer Anderson, the announcer. They were the Philadelphia Warriors for a while. They were the Eastern Warriors for a while. It was crazy popular in that era, though. They would fill the spectrum, believe it or not. And next week, we have one of the greats of the sport, not to mention one of the nicest people I've ever met, roller derby Hall of Famer Judy Arnold.
Wow. Yeah, that's about as cool as it can be. We're going to have to do our homework, Chet. You probably remember some of those Sunday nights. My memory's a little vague from that far back. But we're going to have to do our homework, and we're going to be prepared, and we're going to talk about Judy Arnold and roller derby. How cool is that?
Yeah, it is going to be awesome because I have like 20 questions in my head right now already for her, some of the guys she used to play with. Why it was so popular. And here's the other cool thing about Judy Arnold. She was the stand-in for Raquel Welch in the movie Kansas City Bomber. She was her double. So she did most of the, you know, real tough skating and fight scenes for Raquel Welch with this goofy-looking dark wig. You can see a lot of the clips on YouTube. So we're certainly going to talk to Judy Arnold about her work in Kansas City Bomber. She had some real face time in the movie, too, as an actress.
Very cool. All right, looking forward to that. So, hey, let's get to our signing updates at Carl's Cards and Collectibles. And as we said, it's going to be a very busy month of July starting tomorrow night, Chet. June the 30th, Carl's Cards is hosting another night at the Reading Fightins game. Tickets to the game are free while they last. And, Chet, you are going to that game. You still going? I know you have your tickets.
I will be there. My pal Denny will be joining me. We are making a 1.5-hour trip to Reading, Pennsylvania.
Well, you'll have a great time. Just be sure that fella doesn't wear his Pittsburgh Pirates shirt or I will come hunting
right.
down.
That's right.
All right. Hey, a new addition to the guest list, Reading Fightins up-and-coming star Dylan Cousins will be in the store July the 9th. Also, current Phillies infielder Andres Blanco in the store July the 16th. Former Flyers captain Dave Poulin in the store July the 16th, and also July the 16th, along with Blanco. They will both be there at different times on the 16th. Former Flyer Sean Podine on July the 23rd, and Phillies 2008 World Champion manager Charlie Manuel will be in the store July the 30th. So stop by Carl's Cards and Collectibles at 22 West Eagle Road in Havertown, PA, or give Carl a call at 610-789-4996. You can also visit the website carlscards.com or contact Carl on Twitter at carlscards. Mr. Chesko, do we have a parting shot from you today?
We do indeed. Tuesday morning, we got the news that Buddy Ryan had left us, but a few hours earlier, I awoke to the news that another legendary coach had passed. I will admit right up front, I've watched very little women's college basketball over the years, but There are two coaches that I would name without a problem. These days, it's Gino Auriemma, who's got, what, 11 national championships at UConn. Well, the other name that even a casual observer of the sport absolutely knows is Pat Summitt. She became head coach of the Tennessee Lady Vols at the age of 22 back in 1974. Yeah, 22. And she stayed until the year 2012 when she left him in a battle with early-onset Alzheimer's and dementia. During those 38 years as coach, she won a record 1,098 games, 8 national championships, 7 NCAA Coach of the Year awards, not one losing season. Not surprisingly, she was inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame in 2000, and 4 years ago, President Barack Obama awarded Summitt the Presidential Medal of Freedom. And by the way, in addition to what she did with her teams on the court, all the girls she coached who completed their eligibility went on to graduate from the university. The word legend probably gets overused, but know this. Pat Summitt is a true legend. She was just 64 when she died. Rest in peace, Pat Summitt.
Well, Chet, I'm going to tell you, and we'll have to share with our listeners, that the one thing that you and I don't talk about prior to our shows is our parting shot. And my parting shot was also on Pat Summitt. So I will skip through most of this, but what we can say is Pat Summitt lost the battle with Al, as Bill Lyon likes to call it. And as you mentioned, with all the statistics and the graduation rate, all things I was going to also say, but Pat, a couple other points. Pat once told men's basketball coach Buzz Peterson, that no matter what other responsibility you may have, be sure that every day you spend personal time with your players. They need you. And going from a player at Tennessee Martin where she stated they played a 3-game road trip and never washed their uniforms because they had no money to actually holding donut sales for uniforms at the University of Tennessee and driving the team bus and sleeping in the opponent's gyms and sleeping bags during the early years as head coach, to eventually selling out the arena every game in what is now known as the Summitt. As you mentioned, Pat Summitt was named the Presidential Medal of Freedom, and also in a 2009 Sporting News poll was rated the number 11th greatest coach of all time in any sport at any level. It's safe to say that every female that has ever had the opportunity to play a team sport owes that opportunity somewhere down the line to Pat Summitt. She was a true pioneer for women's team sports. When they put together the Mount Rushmore for coaches, be sure to leave a spot for Pat Summitt. Rest in peace, Pat, at the age of 64, a victim of Al.
So we both did our parting shot on Pat Summitt, but you know what? She's worth it because, boy, she has accomplished a lot in her 64 years.
Yes, she has. And I think of all the statistics that are out there, you know, the 8 national championships and the 1,000-plus wins, the 100% graduation rate is just staggering. To anyone that finished their eligibility, they graduated. I think in a day and age now where that's not the case, and it wasn't like she was hand-picking kids from the neighborhood. She was bringing in kids from all different races, all different backgrounds, all different places in the country, pulling them all together, making them into a successful basketball team, and having them all leave with college educations. You certainly can't beat that. If there's any honor any greater than that, I don't know what it would be.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you.
All right. So, hey, Chet, as we get to the top of the hour, let's thank our special guest, former Phillies All-Star outfielder Glenn Wilson, Carl's Cards and Collectibles for their continuing support of the show, Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chetchesko, this is Bill Furman. We hope you will join Philly Press Box Radio on Wednesday, July 6th at 7 p.m. with our special guest, Judy Arnold. You can listen through our Facebook page or on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio and on both iTunes and Stitcher. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.